Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Erica Wyatt, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Hi, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberto's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, February 11th. This is the 53rd episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is an outstanding, world-renowned chef, and I will introduce him in a moment. But first, as I do on every show, I will start with my PR tip. Later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. Today's tip is to aim for perfection. Okay, now I have to actually admit that I've never liked the word perfectionist, because I don't think anyone could be perfect. But I do like the idea of trying to be your best, giving your all in everything you do, and striving to be top-notch. I think rewards in life generally correlate with one's efforts. So aim to be your best self. That's my tip today. I'm really excited and honored to have my guest here. It is Didier Elena. He's the executive chef of the Chef's Club by Food & Wine in New York City and Aspen. Didier has a 25-year background cooking in some of the most esteemed kitchens from New York to Tokyo, including a long tenure working under Alain Ducasse. Didier was the executive chef at Alain Ducasse at the Essex House, during which time the restaurant was awarded 4 stars by the New York Times and voted Best New Restaurant by the James Beard Foundation in 2001. We are also joined today by Aaron Aritzbe, who is the chef liaison and storyteller at the Chef's Club. So welcome, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'm very excited to hear more about your story and what it was like with working for Ducasse and now what you're doing at the Chef's Club. So I know you're from France. So where did you grow up, and then when did you decide to go to cooking school? And
so actually I grew up born and grew up in Monaco. And I think it's like, in every life when it's about meeting people, and I wasn't on the direction of the cooking school of cooking industry. And I met Ducasse. That was in 88, so a long time ago. And and we talked, and I think it changed a little in my mind on that time. And I think the day after we talked, I started to cook to go through the restaurants the weekends. It was just 6 months after the opening. And it was really the beginning, and I fell really in love with that environment, the job. And I stayed 22 years.
That's it. That's the story. So you went to cooking school before you met Ducasse?
No, never.
No, you didn't? I thought you went to school in Paris.
No. I was in a medicine school. Oh. I stopped the medicine school, going to Ducasse, and after 1 year, I went through a school in Paris for 1 year and a half, and I went back to Ducasse after that. So in fact, it was in two-step. I did the school after starting the school in the kitchen.
Right, so he really influenced you becoming a chef.
Yeah, sure.
So then what was your first position? I mean, I'm assuming you started at the bottom and
really at the bottom, like just try to understand how it's going on in the kitchen, what is a brigade, because it's something very organized and everybody has to do something, trying to understand how the kitchen operate. That's the most difficult thing at the beginning to understand, and it was really great because it was in Monaco at the Louis-Quinze. The Louis-Quinze is one of the most beautiful restaurants that I have seen. The space is outstanding, and the crew, all the team is like very perfectionist. You don't like the word, but it's really the case in Monaco, I think. And everything, every details was like very high, very the pay attention of everything. It was really great.
Yes, I've been to Monaco, I mean, a long time ago when I was in college doing the backpacking thing, and they would not have let us in your restaurant at that time. But I remember it being a beautiful city, and I could just imagine the restaurant there. And so how did you, I mean, for me, I had so many jobs in my life, and you stayed with someone for a long time. So, but you moved around with his restaurants.
Yeah, because it's, you know, you have different way to grow in the industry or seeing your career. But the thing, it was really at the beginning of when Ducat growing up, and every year there was something new. Every year there was something, a new challenge or a new vision. And it's not boring. It's like every year you have something to learn or to challenge yourself. So it's very exciting. And that was the part of the beginning. We're starting in 88 through 92, 93, when he gets the 3 stars, and after he opened the Moustier, which is a little inn in the back of Monaco, and after there was different things, one in Paris when he took over Robuchon in 96, and after it was all the new Spoon, Barre Boeuf, all those restaurants around the world, I would say, because it was at that time London and Hong Kong, and in 2000 he decided, or he joined New York to open at the Essex House, and he asked me if I wanted to join him for that team, for the opening team, and it was like fantastic, because for somebody who grew up in France and having New York like this and a beautiful space that they designed to the Essex House was like a dream come true, you know, something like, wow, blow your eyes. And so I came here in 2000, and everything was new. Culture was new. Language was new. I didn't know how to speak English. It was like a big challenge for everything.
I would imagine. But the similarity of still Ducasse-style restaurant. And, I mean, you've received so many different awards, and I'd never dined there either, which I'm the one in New York. But I mean, what would you, I mean, you've stayed here since
actually I did it back and forth. I was there until 2006, and I went back to France for different reasons, but mostly for family reason and visa problem. And I went through after Japan to open Beige, so a few months, but I get that experience also to another country. And I went back to France, and I took the position as the executive chef at Les Crières in Reims. It's right in the middle of Champagne. It's beautiful, beautiful old house with the 3 stars in the background, you know, but they lost the 3 stars because the chefs retired. And so that was another great experience on the north of France, and I stayed for 4 years and a half, 5 years almost. We get the 2 stars back from Michelin, and after that was the opportunity to coming back to New York at Adour. And the little story is that my wife, she's French, but we, the 2 kids born here in New York, and we wanted to give them a little bit of that piece. And I think for their education also, it's really great to be part of it, and we decided to coming back in New York in 2010. So, in fact, it was for 15 years, but in 2 times.
Got it. And you had told me when we met before this show how you were kind of called in to get the Michelin stars, or get, in a sense, for the restaurants. Like, it sounded to me like a bit of a relief pitcher or something. Like, he knew he could rely on you to bring a restaurant level up. I mean, is that correct?
I don't know. I don't think you work for the stars. The stars is it's something you came after because you did a great job. First, you wanted to deliver a message to the customers. So I think that's the most important when you're starting to think about a challenge or a restaurant. It's what I want to say to the customers, what I want to say through my cuisine or through the cuisine of somebody. It's like really the message that you want to deliver. And after you work about that, it's like a scenery when you're reading a book or when you're writing a book or you're making a movie. You said, this is my line, this is my red line, my target. And I'm so working for stars, it's something right. that's never worked. You're first putting a job together, you're starting to be to stick to your scenery that you decide through your message, and after you build everything around.
And that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Okay, one more Dukas question, then we'll get into the Chef's Club. What's the biggest takeaway you took from him or lesson you learned?
Everything. It's 22 years, so I think he he shaped me like a little, you know, when you shape a little piece of rock. But I think that he never satisfied what he has, so it's always the research of the perfection. It's always like saying, okay, what I can do more for that? What is going to be the next? It's not looking on the back of what you did. It's just looking in front of you and said, what is going to be the next? So that's, I think it's one of the big characteristics of Dukas. Never said enough, just going, and take something else and thinking about the food, what is going to be the next trend of the food, what's going to be the next food that we want to eat, or food that we is going to be in the world. And I think it's never stopped. So that was the biggest thing that I learned, like never sleep, just go.
Well, chefs don't sleep. You don't need sleep for some reason. Okay, so now you made a big switch, because the Chef's Club, let's talk about that, because I'm familiar with it from being there. I'd gone to the Aspen one when it first opened, and now the New York City one, and I love the concept, but it's a big switch from working for a Dukas restaurant.
I don't know, it's part of the life. First, it's also meeting people. So Chef's Club, it's a man whose name is Stéphane de Baetz, who think about a new way to go to the restaurants. And he went through he meet with Dana Cohen from Food & Wine, and he decided to do something like putting on stage some chef. And that idea is fantastic, because you give the hands to somebody else and work together. So it's a thing about food, and that's fantastic. So yes, he started in Aspen in Colorado because of Food & Wine Festival, and it's a round of four chefs working together on one menu. And I think that's fantastic, because my wish and my dream is to try to understand the most of the culture that I can. And when I decide to come in the US, it was also to be part of that country and to understand how it was and what is the food. And I never realized that on the last 2 years, I learned so much by being with those old chefs and trying to understand and try and learn from them what is their philosophy. And that's it's all about Chef's Club. It's really giving the experience that you have through the table, and it's fantastic.
It is. I love the concept, and it's so unique. So Aaron, if you want to jump in here, about how have you gone about selecting, let's say, the first four chefs, and maybe you want to explain a little more to people who don't understand
that's really the concept. Every chef's are part of the best new chefs from Food & Wine. So first, it's a work between Dana Cohen and the team of Food & Wine to pick the right people for the right location, especially for Aspen. And after, we jump in and we work with them and try to set the menu together. But the first is really that vision of the best new chefs of Food & Wine.
Right, so they've been doing this for 25 years now, and they do 10 each year, so you've got, you know, 250 people to choose from at this point, and that sets up a network all across the country in every single corner. And so Didier traveled a lot over these last few years, trying to sort of doing some scouting, some vetting work a little bit. And I think one of the biggest draws for these visiting chefs is they get to work with Didier, who is, you know, Dukas 20 plus years, but not somebody who wants to stand in the foreground. He's an executor. He's like an assassin in a sense. You know, it's like he's there and can cook so many different types of cuisine and so many different levels of cuisine. I mean, if we asked him tomorrow to try for 4 stars New York Times and we open a different restaurant, he could do it. And if we ask him tomorrow instead to make a bistro, he can do that just as well. It's like he's got this versatility that I think is really, really incredible. And I see it every single time we have these chefs come through. It's like there's so much mutual learning and sharing of information that happens between them, and it's really great.
Yeah, so how long do chefs stay in the rotation? Like a couple months?
No, just we started in Aspen, the rotation is 1 year, because in fact you have 2 seasons, really full season in Aspen, the summer and the winter, and in between it's really, it's another city. But the 4 chefs stayed for 1 year.
Okay. I'm thinking it was a short amount of time. Well, I want to get into who the chefs are there now, but we're going to take a little break. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Break song is called I Think I've Got My Baby by Camille Hartman. All in the Industry, coming right back.
Hi, welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Didier Alena, and we're also have a special guest in the house, Aaron Arezpe. I'm making sure I'm saying your name correct. I was trying to get Didier right. Do I say that correct?
Very good.
Okay. Good. Now, the Chefs Club of New York and Aspen. So it's Food and Wine Magazine's restaurant. So why don't we talk a bit, could you explain how Food and Wine is involved? And you're saying you get the chefs from the Best New Chefs, but what's their direct input in the magazine? Like, how does it work, you know, with the rotating chefs?
In fact, the big picture, the idea is to have that magazine and becoming the magazine alive. So you turn the page, you see the food, but also you wanted to try the food. And it's possible because of the restaurant. So in fact, it's really the link between the restaurant and the magazine. It's for that on the menu, you have those different Best New Chefs dishes or signature dishes, but also some the salad of the month, the dessert of the month, some selection of the wine through the magazine. And that makes this restaurant and this concept so special, because it's really the total of all those experiences together through a restaurant.
Right. So who are the chefs that are there now?
So right now we have Linton Hopkins from Atlanta. Le Pigeon. We have Gabriel Le Pigeon and Gabriel Rucker from Portland, Oregon. We have Lachlan Patterson from Colorado, Boulder, Colorado, and Eric Anderson from Minneapolis.
It's a great mix. And as you know, I was there solo dining. That's how we initially met. And I went with Gabriel Rucker's. I went with 2 of his dishes, even though I was thinking of mixing it up, because they seem to go well together. But what was amazing was I've been to Portland, but I've never been to his restaurant. So now I can say I've had his Le Pigeon signature dish, which was wonderful. in New York City, executed by you and your team.
Yeah, that's also another aspect of the concept. Is like getting a touch of the signature of the philosophy of all those chefs. And when you travel and you're going to visit the city where they're working, you may have the wish to go in their restaurants to try the food. So if we can be in the between, it's not to replace the chef, it's just to give an idea of what they're doing. And it's good because when you look at the four chefs, what we have in New York, it's four different philosophy. It's four different corner of the country, so the approach of the food is totally different, but together in a one menu.
Yeah, it's exciting. You've also done some special dinners with these chefs.
Exactly, on the back. Okay. On the back of the restaurant, we have a room that we call Chef's Club Studio. It's a very intimate room, 20 people can be sit, and we try to have chefs coming in and driving a special menu on a certain night. And this is really really an interaction between chefs and the customers. It's only 20 people sit at the same time talking together. There's their own cuisine in that room, so you can see the chefs preparing the foods and asking questions if you have some questions to ask. It's really an experience all together with the wine, with the food, and talking about how the idea of the food, where they're coming from, and stuff like this. So it's really an interaction between the customers and the chefs.
Right. What's a recent one you did or you have coming up?
So we had Linton Hopkins came in. We had Lachlan Patterson and Eric Anderson who came already. Right this week we have Ben Sokol, and next week we will have Gabriel Rocker, another best new chef, so who is part of the menu also in the main restaurant, who is going to come for 3 days.
Yeah, so Ben is from Providence, Rhode Island, a restaurant called Birch, and he's the first chef that's outside of the roster of the former Best New Chefs, and he was one of the first people that I brought through there, because I've been to his restaurant, I guess, 2 or 3 times now, and it's really, really spectacular. It's very creative, a lot of amazing vegetable dishes in particular, and really, really great seafood from Rhode Island, and I just think he's somebody that we felt had a sense of authorship in his food and had a very clear voice in his food, and so we wanted to bring him in. We had last night the first of his dinner series, and tonight he'll be there again. He's been doing 10 courses, but really the setup in the studio can be anything. It can be all over the place. You know, it can be a very long, intricate tasting menu if they want, and if they just want to do tapas instead, we can do that as well. It's like it's up to the chef. They have autonomy. They are just people that we think are exceptional talents, and we don't want to get in their way, essentially. We'll have, trying to think, I guess beyond Gabriel Rocker in a couple of weeks, we'll have also Gray Nonis and Michael Fotosek from Olame in Austin. It's sort of a southern restaurant, much in the style of like a Husk or something along those lines. And, you know, we have our eyes internationally. We have our eyes all over the place, yeah, essentially.
We will have Hélène Darroze soon from Paris. We will have Akram also from Paris. David Toutain. Is coming also. Alexandre Couillon, Gilles Épier, who's been a best new chef, but in 92 or 93, and he returned back to France. He opened a restaurant named Citrus Etoile, so it's very nice. You know, it's like the community is coming together. It's very nice.
Yeah, it's so impressive, and I'm sitting here thinking you could eat at the Chef's Club pretty much every night and try different chefs and different dishes, because you also have dishes on the menu that are yours. Right?
I don't like the idea of saying that it's two restaurants in one, but you have really two space. So on the back, you have those the little studio with the different chefs, and in front, you have the four chefs that we talked about, the best new chefs, and that stay every day. That's the menu, and we complemented some dishes from our own, because at the end of the day, you wanted to have a menu who we can have the choice of a crudo or a salad or a soup. You know, it's like the customer's going in a restaurant. He's not going in a show. It's a part of the show, but it's a restaurant.
Right. It's a beautiful space. It was, I know, designed by David Rockwell.
Yeah, David Rockwell did an amazing job with a very open kitchen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how do you feel about the very open kitchen?
It's part of the experience because it's the restaurant. It's talking about the chefs, and I think it was very important to get all that very open space. And so as I say, the president of the company, Stefan, created that in Aspen three four years ago, and they reproduced it in New York with a different architecture, because it's downtown with the brick, with all that stuff. But it's a very open restaurant, open space.
Right. So, between Aspen and New York, how are you managing the both? I think you're flying
on the both place. On the both place, we have executive chefs who run the room. In Aspen is Todd Schlossberg, and in New York it's Matt Ida. They are very, very, very nice chefs, very nice person, and we communicate every day about the two places, and we try to. To do our best to deliver every day the food.
Well, I think you are. I can't wait to go back, because being there solo and I only had two dishes, there's a lot more to try.
Yeah. Sure,
for sure.
Let me ask you the question I had from last week. So I asked Leslie Sprocco, who was my guest on episode 52. She's an award-winning author, speaker, wine consultant, and television host. So I asked her to ask you a question. So her question is, when you're cooking, do you have a wine glass in your hand? And if so, what are you drinking?
So if I'm cooking at home, yes, I have a glass of wine.
I assume she meant at home. You can answer that however you want.
I think for me, the wine is a part important of the food. It's 50-50. I'm a big, big fan of wine. I know more geographically and by name French wine, because I grew up there, but I'm very open to different wine, and I think it's part of the experience. There's no great food with no wine, and vice versa. So I think that's very important. To talk about my favorite, I would say it, stupid answer, anything is good, but my heart is going more on the Rhone Valley. I love the typicity of spicy, peppery wine, and I think it's going very well with the food.
Okay, great. When you're answering, I was thinking that it's obvious that you're working for a place by Food and Wine magazine.
That's part
together.
Of, yeah, it's mm-hmm. together.
Right. Okay, terrific. She's a fun lady, knows her wine, and I think she cooks with a wine glass in her hand.
So. That's great.
Okay, we're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back and do my speed round game, talk some industry news. It's all in the industry, Heritage Radio Network.
And this one's called Kill Me in the Summertime by the Dead Stars.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
We're back. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guests today are Didier Elena and Aaron Arizpe. They are from the Chef's Club of New York. It is time for my speed round game. Do you both want to play? It can be fun. Okay. So what I do is I'm going to name two things and you just pick your preference, like chocolate or vanilla.
Got it.
Okay. Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Out.
In.
Wine, beer, or cocktail?
Wine.
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
A la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
Large plates.
Small.
I like having two people. It's fun. Tipping or all-inclusive charge? Hot topic.
I used to be a waiter, so I'm not sure how to answer this.
Well, we're going to talk about tipping in the industry news, but you're both kind of...
All-inclusive, I'll say.
Okay.
I think it makes more sense.
I said both.
Both. Okay, cool. Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Chef's counter.
All right, Didier, this was just for you. Cooking or expediting?
I think you need the two of them. Cooking is really the heart of the night. It's really the bad things to do because it's giving a little bit of piece of you in the plate. So that's we're doing the job for that. But you need a good expediter also to make sure, because a restaurant is a service, and service, I think it's two different things. You have one side you cooked, and the other side is a service. The service is a job. The cooking is really what you love to do, or making love, or whatever the name that you want to name it. But cooking is the passion. Service or expedite, it's the part of the job, and make sure that the customers have a great experience. So it's two different aspects of the job.
That makes sense. Got it. Okay, a couple more. Well, open kitchen or closed kitchen?
Definitely open kitchen.
Open.
Okay. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Dessert.
You guys, sure you get along? You like each other? Lots of difference.
He's okay.
And last one, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, or Aspen? You're looking at me like I can't answer that.
The world. Can pick one. It's impossible.
Okay.
I think the diversity is what we're looking for.
Very good.
I'll go with Manhattan.
All right. Let's talk some industry news. So in the Wall Street Journal this week was an article by Jay Cheshes called The Chipotle Effect, How Chefs Are Reinventing Fast Food. So I've talked about this on my show a bit, how this fast casual trend is growing, and there's a lot of big name chefs that are opening casual places. In the article, they had Franklin Becker with The Little Beat, Josh Skeens, who's opening a place, Fat Noodle from San Francisco. You have Jose Andres doing beefsteak. And also I saw on this someone who's at the Chef's Club, Lachlan McKinnon-Patterson. He's opening a Pizzeria Local in Denver. So what's your take on this?
To be honest, I think the cuisine, the food business is a reflect of the society. So if the people wanted that, it's because it's what we wanted now. The only thing that we have to think is about what are you doing with that? What is the fresh product with the fresh everything? So I think every kind of cuisine is nice, unless you use the right products. I'm really against the mass production, and I think this is the only thing that you have to erase from the world. It's trying to protect the world. The world is the thing that gives us life, and we need to protect that. That's the only position. After any kind of thing, street food, fast food, everything is great. The only thing is really to be focused on the product and try to avoid all the mass production. Who killed the world.
I think a lot of these people as well, Josh Gaines, for example, is an incredible chef, and he's not just an incredible cook, and Lachlan Patterson, the same kind of thing. I mean, it's like these guys know how to allocate their manpower, and they know how to allocate their resources and set up a brigade such that when they're not there, it's functioning just fine. I mean, I imagine Josh is going to be in Saison still, five nights a week, and I can't picture him on the line of the noodle place, as awesome as that noodle place is probably going to be. But I think it's just a matter of there being actually relatively few people who are capable of doing it on a very efficient level, maybe, because there's so much that goes into it. There's so much planning. I mean, it's crazy to think about the base of Momofuku, for example, being in New York, but there being one in Sydney and there being one in Toronto and all this kind of thing. Like the Jean Georges of the world, there are very few. There are very, very few. And I mean, I think Jay's a fantastic writer, by the way. It was a really good piece.
He is, and I know him, and I think he was able to really put it into a concise fashion. I think this trend is just going to keep growing. I think there's going to be more high-end chefs going for the more fast casual, because as you said, it's what people want.
I think it goes hand in hand with the conversation of whether or not fine dining is dead or whether it's dying or what have you. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's I think the need for both extremes of the spectrum will always be there. It will always be there.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Okay, another article. So this is the tipping. So in Crane's New York Business, it was also picked up in Gothamist, which my engineer Jack pointed out to me. Thank you, Jack. So the article is Eateries at the Tipping Point, and is by Lisa Fickenscher. Mostly talking about Tom Colicchio's restaurants and how he's thinking of eliminating tipping, which would then maybe raise the menu prices by about 22%. And talking about, you know, how the state might raise the hourly rate from $5 to $8.50. Tom also said in this article that he suspects 10 years from now no one will know what a tip is. It's a big statement. I mean, do you think no one's going to know what a tip is 10 years from now?
I don't know. If you look the big pictures, if you look the different option in the world, there are some restaurants, there's no tipping restaurant. The country, there's no tipping restaurants. But in fact, it's more deep than that, because you have to change all the mentality, the culture, and everything. I think it's going to be very difficult to have that kind of change, big change. Everything is possible, but what I know, it's like when you look at different country, when you're going out to different country, there's different way to going out, so it's all tipping. So everything is possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I worked at Charlie Trotter's in 1997, long time ago. I was a server, and I was salaried. He was always ahead of the curve with everything he was doing. But that was one thing a lot of people didn't know, that we were salaried, tips, it was inclusive, and that was a long time ago. So I think there are places. I mean, you have Grant Achatz doing it, and it's been catching on, but it will be interesting to see if it will go across the board to more casual restaurants, you know?
I ask myself who's going to be sort of the what's going to be the tipping point for it, because there are already a lot of very vocal sort of, you know, spokesmen for the cause, if you will. I mean, Grant Achatz is one, Dan Patterson in San Francisco, mm-hmm. Amanda Cohen's recently reopened, Dirt Candy operates on that same premise. I think that there has long been a lot of discontent about the disparity between front of house and back of house compensation, and that setup goes a long way towards helping that. And so I think that it's definitely catching on in the larger cities. I don't know whether it's doing the same in Nashville or Austin or, you know, Charleston or whatever. I do know that at the, you know, in Chicago, San Francisco, and New York, it's definitely starting to take hold, and I think it's just going to need one really, really big chef to say, all my restaurants, this is what we're doing from now forward, you guys should do it as well.
Yeah,
you know?
I just wonder if it would affect service, like the stuff. I mean, I think in the U.S. we're used to great service, because I think, you know, they're working for the
it's
tips.
Incentivized, yeah.
Versus in Europe, sometimes it's not as there's not as the incentive as much with service, I've seen. But I don't know if it would change things. I mean, certainly if you go to, you know, Grand Achatz or when these restaurants, service is superb.
Right.
So I just wonder if that would affect things that where servers are no longer working for tips, you know, if they're just baking a base.
And you have to imagine that the managers in these restaurants are hiring with the higher level of scrutiny to begin with. And so if they switch, maybe it's not as impactful as if a very, very casual restaurant switches. And then it's like, wait a minute, where's my server? I can't find my server. He or she is getting paid the same amount of money, whether or not they help us out at all, whether or not they help us have a great experience or not.
Right. Well, we'll see. We'll see if I'm doing my show 10 years from now, what I'm talking about. Okay, so we're going to take one more break, come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
And this one's called Crying Blues by the California Honey Drops. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience of the week. Now, this week, I went to Coten. Here's the rundown. The location, 21 Bedford Street near Downing Street in Manhattan's West Village. The concept, a cozy Italian restaurant and wine bar. The chef owner, Roberta Poisson, who also owns Aria and Terra Tribeca wine bars. Why did I go? Because I was in the hood, and I was looking for a nice casual spot to eat after a terrific but very long day at the Bitten Food Conference. My experience? I arrived early, on the early side on a Friday night, got a seat at the bar. The place was intimate with less than 30 seats, including the bar stools. The staff was helpful and pleasant, and the candlelit ambiance and rustic setting were perfect for my mood. What did I get? The menu consisted of bruschette, salumi, grilled meats, pastas, and many specials. I went with the octopus salad, which was one of Roberto's signature dishes, and I ended with an espresso. My take? It was a nice-sized portion of tender octopus, cooked perfectly, along with the house Italian bread with fine olive oil. It was a great meal. The scene? Friends and dates. Perfect for friends and dates. Interesting tidbit. The space used to be Eno, a well-received wine bar. Personal fun fact. I represented Roberto Poisson many years ago when he was the chef at his namesake restaurant in Hell's Kitchen. He was not the owner of that restaurant, and I haven't worked with him since, but I always liked his cooking. And he's a very nice guy. The cost, $23, not including tax and tip. Would I go back? Yes, especially on a date. Website. I couldn't find one, but they do have a Facebook page, and the spelling of the name Coten is C-O-T-E-N-N-E. There we have that. Okay, time for the final question. So, Didier, next week I'm having, actually not next week, in 2 weeks I'm having on Allie Rosen, who's the host and producer of Potluck Video, which her tagline is bringing everyone to the table with the best food, drink, and travel videos online. And I happened to just peek at Facebook before this show, and I saw that she posted that she's been nominated for an Emmy for her show because it's on NYC Media, which is really amazing. So congratulations, Allie. So I know I just threw a lot at you. Anyways, what I would like, Didier, is a question for Allie, and she basically does food and travel videos.
What is the last travel you did for food?
What's the last
travel trip?
Oh, the last trip? Okay. Very good. I will ask her. I think she travels a lot. Okay. That's the show. So thank you both so much for taking the time out to come out here. And it's been fun.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
So I've been speaking with Didier Lena. He's the executive chef at the Chef's Club by Food & Wine in New York City in Aspen, as well as Aaron Arizpe, who's the storyteller, I'll just call him that, of the Chef's Club of New York as well. Now, You can find their website, chefsclub.com, on social media, at Didier Elena, at Chefs Club NY, and at Pocket Fork. My social media is at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry, at Heritage _ Radio, Facebook page, All in the Industry. My website's BayerPublicRelations.com. As a reminder, all of our shows are archived on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are on Stitcher and iTunes. Thanks to my engineer, Jack, and everyone out there listening. I will be away next week warming up at South Beach Food and Wine Festival. I will be back Wednesday, February 25th at 4 p.m. with another live show. Next week, we're going to play back my episode with the New York Post restaurant reviewer, Steve Cuzzo. If you haven't heard it, it's a good one, if I say so myself. I'm Sherry Bayer. Thanks for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.